Normally, you would expect the 49ers to lean on that running game and so forth, but there were times last night where Jimmy G, heck, at one time he threw 9 passes in a row and attempted, 21 passes just in the first half last night. But Jimmy G ends up throwing for 4 touchdowns, only the third time in the last 2 seasons he's had 100-plus yards passing and at least 2 touchdowns in the first half of a game. Marcus, I'll start with you. Where are you on the 49ers?
Absolutely a Super Bowl contender. I think one of the favorites in the NFC. The problem in the middle of the year when they were struggling is that they weren't healthy. They were missing Bosa. They were missing Trent Williams. They were missing a quarterback at times. I think, you know, Garoppolo has – he's the guy that we know that he is. I think he's good enough to beat some teams. He's good enough to take a team to the Super Bowl when he's got a great supporting cast, one of the best coach teams in the NFL, and better than you might think on the defensive side of the ball. So they're not fancy. I think they're going to have a real hard time against a team that can really score, Buffalo, Kansas City, some of those teams from the AFC. But they're as good as any team in the NFC, I think.
What do you think, Brad?
Well, I mean, they're orchestrated. What Kyle Shanahan is doing, and I totally co-sign what Troy Aikman said at the end of the game last night. I mean, what Shanahan is doing is a thing of beauty. And you look back on it now, and so many things came together for them. That Christian McCaffrey trade was brilliant for them. They needed a running back. Christian McCaffrey needed a place where he could go and really contribute. I don't think we ever really got to see, for injuries and a variety of other reasons, the Panthers being pathetic, we never really got to see what McCaffrey was capable of, what he showed in college, and now we're getting to see it because he's on a team that can utilize it. That being said, and also the injury that led to Garoppolo being the starting quarterback again for San Francisco put them in a position where they could utilize that run game. They really needed that for a couple of reasons. I think if you put Garoppolo, and I'm not going to bang on Garoppolo because the guy does nothing but win. I mean, he can be ugly doing it, but he's still getting wins. You put Garoppolo as the starting quarterback on that Cardinals team, and they're probably atrocious. But for what they're doing, for the coach that they've got, for the pieces they have around them, it's just incredible what San Francisco is doing right now. And it looks to me like it's a two-horse race between San Fran and the Eagles. And with Dallas coming on strong, but those are the two teams I think to beat in the NFC, at least as of right now. But that was beautiful last night. That was incredible.
No, you're right, Brad. They threw it in the first half and then ran it in the second half. And so, like, McCaffrey played 25 snaps in the first half. Elijah Mitchell only 3 snaps in the first half. And then in the second half, when they needed to run the clock and close out the game, so to speak, they put Elijah Mitchell in and let him take the pounding in the second half. Debo Samuel, he thought he was carrying the ball too much. He didn't like the pounding that he was having to take. So he only had to have 3 rushing attempts last night. George Kittle and Ayuk each caught a couple of touchdown passes, and that defense is really good. So, yeah, I think they're going to be a fun team to watch in the second half of the season. They got some games coming up, too. After they play New Orleans next, well, then they got a home game against Miami coming up on the 4th of December. The next week, they take on Tampa Bay, also at home. The next week, they got a big game at Seattle. So it's going to be fun to watch this team, especially in the month of December, and see how they come along. But I'm with Marcus. I think they're definitely one of the teams to beat in the NFC. I think it's going to be fascinating with Philly and with Dallas and with San Francisco. You can maybe throw Minnesota is still 8-2 even after that disaster on Sunday.
They look terrible this weekend. I think that was the curse of me picking them this weekend is why they.
So, Brad, so what are your thoughts? Yeah, we didn't get to talk to you yesterday, Brad. What'd you think?
Oh, it was horrible. I mean, I thought playing at home, the Vikings are playing better. I didn't buy in on the Vikings until much later in the season, but they just kept playing so consistently. I thought Dallas playing the way that they had looked the last couple of weeks, go into Minnesota, and maybe I underestimated the high and the come down off of that Buffalo game. But, man, oh, man, was that horrible. I just don't know what happened to them. Dallas looked fantastic. Dallas looked like a Super Bowl contender in that game.
So, Marcus, if you were going to give me a top 5 today, NFL-wise, what would it look like?
It would look like Kansas City at number one. Tougher schedule in the AFC. I would say that Philly keeps winning, but I think teams are starting to figure them out a little bit. So I go KC, Philly, Buffalo, Dallas. Then you can throw in a lot of those. Miami, I think, probably is next for me.
Okay. Brad?
Well, I'm on board with – I mean, four of the five are pretty much locked in. It's kind of like the college football playoff picture. Buffalo, Kansas City, even though Buffalo started to slide a little bit, Philly started to slide a little bit, but I'm not knocking them out of the top five yet. I'm going to put Dallas in there because they keep playing consistently. And what I saw in that game against Minnesota was Dak doing what he needed to do. He wasn't playing hero ball in that game, and Dallas played so much better as a result of it. And then you add that Dallas defense onto it. And so I'm going to have Dallas in my top five. I know it's the flavor of the week. San Francisco I'm really high on right now. Miami continues to play well. I mean, there's a couple of teams that I could be convinced to knock into the top five because of the way that they've been playing recently. And I hate to just jump on board with San Francisco, but I do think that they've got – a lot of pieces in place. And again, I think it's sort of like what we talked about with Cooper Rush with the Cowboys, where they're playing a little more simplistic with Garoppolo at the quarterback position, and that makes them they're playing smart. Simplistic's not the right word. They're playing smart and getting what's offered for them. So I'm going to put them in there, even though I'm a little embarrassed to do it, but I really like what I've seen from them since they picked up McCaffrey.
Hey, I want to ask you guys about another team, the New York Jets. They're still sitting there at 6-4 on the season, and they got a quarterback named Zach Wilson who is 5-2 as a starter. But he hadn't played well in two out of the last three games, both of them losses to the New England Patriots. Sunday, he was 9-22, a career low 77 yards.
77 yards.
77 yards in a 10-3 loss, and so he was asked after the game if he let down the defense, and he said simply no. Well, that got a lot of attention in the media and on social media, and so yesterday Robert Saleh came out, and 3 weeks after he said Wilson's going to be the starter for the rest of the season barring injury, yesterday he wouldn't commit even if he's going to be the starter this Sunday coming up against the Chicago Bears. I think evidently, there was a lot of fallout, Marcus, from the lot of members of that defense didn't like the lack of accountability on the part of Zach Wilson. So what do you think is going to happen there, Mark?
I think a really crappy question to ask him that. I mean, the answer is pretty obvious. The offense was bad overall, but there are 11 guys out there. I watched a lot of that game, and it was comical, the lack of offense on either side. The Jets defense was good. The Patriots defense was really good. The Patriots defense has been good all year. It really has.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
They've had a
but don't
a
you have to
season.
Just say, Jets hey, I wasn't good enough? I understand everyone was bad, and he wasn't
guess,
the only
I
mean, one.
I think sometimes people, I mean, what do you expect from somebody at the podium? Like, that's asking somebody, are you like the, do you consider yourself the greatest player of all time, or are you the best player in the league right now? I mean, what kind of answer should you give? I mean, I could see it either way. Now, relating with your teammates is something that's completely different. That's what goes on behind the scenes in the locker room, so maybe if he's arrogant enough to not believe that, and that's the way that he treats some of the guys in the locker room, then I think it could be somewhat of an issue. But I don't think the coach decides who's going to play quarterback based on what's said at the podium. And if he does, he's not a very good coach.
My issue, Craig, is less what he did to get crossways with the defense, but maybe what he has done to not sync up with his offense. I mean, the defense played well enough. They should have won that game on Sunday. They couldn't move the ball, and 77 yards of passing is embarrassing. And he was their leading rusher, too, with 26 yards on the ground. They just couldn't move the ball. And I wonder if, and this sort of leans into what Mark is implying, I wonder if he is not carrying some of the attitude over. I agree it's a stupid question to ask in the first place, but if that's the way that he answers it in that moment, is he doing things not to bring the offense together in the locker room? And if that's the case, that would explain a lot why you're going to be noncommittal to him being the starting quarterback the rest of the way.
And in Salah's defense, Marcus, I don't think if he does bench him, I don't think he's benching him just for the answer. I mean, Salah said, he said, when you put up 100 yards of offense, is actually 103, he goes, I don't care how good New England is, and they are good. He goes, it's unacceptable. He goes, it's not NFL football. So if he gets
Well, they've
benched,
had some injuries, yeah. and then again, where's the offensive coordinator's responsibility in this? I don't think the Jets had the ball at the end of the game a couple of times with a chance to possess it and go win it, and it was 3-3. They punted with whatever it was, 30 seconds or 20 seconds left in the game, figuring they were going to overtime, and then they gave up the big special teams play. But I think the Jets' problems with Breece Hall out, and they've lost other guys this season, is just that they're not good enough with those limited weapons.
Well, he's only thrown four touchdown passes. Joe Flacco only played the first 3 weeks, and he threw five touchdown passes just in the first 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah. I wouldn't have a problem if they change the quarterbacks, but I don't think it's going to be a whole lot easier for Joe Flacco. There's not light years difference between the two of them.
I think the Jets were just overperforming through the first part of the season, and all of a sudden, and they arrived. You're right. 2 weeks ago, they beat the Bills, which who would have thought that? But I think they've been overperforming, and I think the expectation level has gotten higher. I mean, listen, I say what I said about Zach Wilson and what's going on in the locker room. I don't know anything about what's going on in the locker room, but I do find it interesting that the coach did not stand up for his guy and say, no, this is our guy, and we're going to fight our way through. I think he sees that they put themselves in a position where they're way better off than anybody would have expected at this point in the season, and he's got to figure out the smartest thing that he can do to continue to win and maximize the season. But, I mean, nobody all year long, even through the best of weeks with the Jets, has touted Zach Wilson as an MVP candidate. I mean, the guy's not playing that great. They just continue to win. And so I think he's looking at what can we do to continue to win and get into the playoffs and then build off of that. Because, I mean, they were terrible. And to go from where they were to the way that they played the first part of this season, they can't have all the gaps filled in. They still need some pieces. So it's not like they were going to be a Super Bowl contender this year anyway. So we'll see what happens. But I think there's a reasonable argument to be made either way.
I'm just betting that some of the members of that defense, maybe even some members of the offense, have talked to Salah here in the last couple of days. That's what I'm betting. And just the fact, I mean, just their performance has not been good. Now, Flacco is not the next guy on the depth chart. It's Mike White who is next on the depth chart. But then Flacco did start the first three games of the season, and Salah wouldn't rule out either quarterback being a replacement this week.
Well, so one more thing for the Jets. They played their first three divisional games at home. They lost their first one on the road. They're going to lose their next two on the road. They're not going to beat Miami in Miami, and they're not going to beat Buffalo in Buffalo. So I think that the season is a nice little run for the Jets here. Zach Wilson's future as a quarterback of the franchise, absolutely up to be questioned. But at least we enjoyed the Jets while they lasted.
The Thunder were back in action last at home to take on the Knicks after their long road trip. The Knicks were one team that they beat on that road trip, Marcus, and Thunder couldn't miss up in Madison Square Garden. They cooled off considerably last night. And the Knicks get the victory, 129-119. But I was telling Matt earlier, Mark, sometimes when you go through a hot streak like the Thunder did shooting the ball, sometimes you tend to relax a little on the defensive end. And that looks like the case here with the Thunder is the Knicks shoot over 52% from the field. They didn't really light it up from three-point range, only 11 for 34. But the Knicks shot it well, and they out-rebounded by 10, and they were plus 5 on points off of turnovers and 72 points in the paint. I mean, the Knicks came ready to play last night, Marcus.
I think so, probably after losing the game at home for Oklahoma City. Not as efficient of a night from SGA as we've seen from him in other nights, and the game was just kind of about the same margin the entire way through. So that was not a great night for the Thunder, but they've got Denver coming in here, who they've had a lot of success against the last couple seasons, and then the Bulls on Friday.
You know, one of the things, Craig, that we keep getting when we talk about the Thunder this year is people questioning Dagnall. Now, I don't know why. I mean, they're questioning him in terms of long-term viability. Is he the right coach in the long term? What he did last night, and I know the Thunder lost that game, but I'm using last night as an illustration of what he has done a lot through the season. I love the fact that he keeps working on rotations and finding guys to put on the floor together that's going to maximize who's playing well. He doesn't get caught in, this is going to be my rotation, I'm going to stick with these guys together collectively. He keeps working at finding guys to put on the floor together. Yeah, they lost that game last night, but the Thunder have outperformed what our expectations have been for them this year. And the Thunder are going to struggle if SGA has an off night in the slightest. But I continue to be impressed with what I see out of Mark Dagnall, and I do think he's the right guy for this group of young guys. I think he's having a good influence on them, and we're going to see how it pays off in the long term. I'm not getting caught up in losing one game here to the Knicks or dropping a game to anybody, really. I mean, a win over anybody except Houston or Orlando, and even Orlando with the couple of young guys that they've got can come out and surprise you. But, you know, if you lose to Houston, you lose to San Antonio, you might reexamine that. But there's nobody else in the NBA that I'm going to get caught up in the moment of, well, we shouldn't have lost last night to the Knicks. I continue to be impressed with what I see from Dagnall on the bench.
Totally with you. Running in different circles. Are you hearing that, Craig? I don't hear him.
No, I'm not. I'm not hearing criticism. I was going to say, if there's criticism of Dagnall, these people need to, you know.
How many times have we had callers call in and say, "Is Dagnall the right guy? Is he going to be the guy that can get them there once they're ready to go?" I mean, I don't see anything that makes me doubt his ability to be that guy.
Same. 100. Yeah. I think he's a good coach. I really do. I just don't think that there's a lot of focus paid on the head coach. He's very, he's not the, you know, people don't really, he's not outgoing. He's not, that's not to say that he doesn't have a good personality, because I think that he's pretty, almost, I think, operates just how a head coach, Sam Presti, would want a head coach to do it. But I think on the floor, I see a lot of positivity and a lot of improvement from guys in the last couple seasons developing, and it's been kind of a tough position for him to be in.
Yeah, he will be under the microscope more when they start trying to win. I mean, when they have higher expectations, I'll put it that way. They're trying to win. The players are trying to win. He's trying to win. I'm just saying, but it's his job to, you know, almost have a big rotation, because he's got to check out a lot of different players and you know, try different combinations and so forth. Like a game like last night, you know, I look at this box score and I go, well, 18, 9, and 7 for Josh Giddey. That's pretty good. He shot 8 for 15. Yeah, he missed both of his threes, but, I mean, that's a good night of development for Josh Giddey. Lou Dort shooting the ball a whole lot better. Jalen Williams, I mean, this guy has been a find, and credit Sam Presti for that, but also credit Dagnall's coaching of trying to work ways play Jalen Williams, J-Dub, out of Santa Clara. So, no, if anyone is down on Dagnall, I just don't understand that whatsoever. Yeah, the Thunder lose the game. They drop to 7-10 on the season. But I would have to say give the Thunder a very positive grade for the first 17 games of this season, right? So
I'm not suggesting that people are down on Dagnall. I'm saying that every time we've talked about it, we've had at least a couple of callers call and say, yeah, but is he the guy? Is he, you know, they just haven't bought into him. And I think everything that you just said, in addition to what I was saying, points to that. And these guys continue to get better. I mean, Giddey may have nights where he shoots the better than others, but rebounds and assists, I can't find his stat line for the season on this app that I use, but rebounds and assists, he's been consistently solid all year long, even on nights when he's not shooting the ball as well as he does on others. We keep getting accused of being cheerleaders for this team, but I kind of wear it as a badge of honor because I do think this team, there's a lot to be happy about with what they're doing.
Well, and for SGA, if a night where he goes for 30-7, you know, if that's a bad night, which, I mean, he didn't shoot the ball, 9-22. I mean, he's been shooting for a very high percentage with as much defensive attention as he's getting. It's not that easy to shoot a high percentage. I don't care if the shots are, you know, 5 feet from the bucket. He's already, you know, he's got an extra defender coming over virtually every time he goes to the bucket. He got to the line 13 times, was 12-13 from the line. The guy makes his free throws. What's not to like? And he had seven assists also. Seven assists last night against three turnovers. So, anyway, yeah. The Knicks, I just think, Mark, this was a case where the Thunder got him up in New York, and I think this Knicks team came in a lot more focused to take on a Thunder team that scored like 145, was it, against them up in the Garden?
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, that's true. I think that's.
I think that's what we had last night. Okay. Let's go around the league a little bit. Boston and Chicago last night. The Bulls snapped the Celtics' 9-game winning streak. They got 28 from DeRozan, Zach LaVine with 22. On the Celtics side of things, I mean, they got 28 from Tatum, 25 from Brown, and 23 from Malcolm Brogdon off the bench. Brogdon was 5-6 from three off the bench. But the streak had to end sometime. Marcus, what are your thoughts on that one?
The Celtics have been awesome this year. That's a team that I think is really the off-season moves have been good for them. It doesn't look like the coaching situation with Boston has affected them a bunch. And so, like you said, the streak has to come to an end at some point in time. The Bulls are a little bit disappointing at 7-10. Not as magical as the season was a year ago with trying to fit all those pieces together.
Interesting matchup in Cleveland last night, Brad, where the Cavaliers beat Atlanta 114-102. Cavaliers led by Donovan Mitchell with 29 points. He knocked down four threes. Darius Garland also in that backcourt had 26. So 29 and 26 out of their backcourt. And then Jetty Osman, LeBron's old guy, 23 off the bench last night. So what are your thoughts on those two teams, Brad? Cleveland with the win over Atlanta.
Well, my question in this is, because Cleveland has surprised lots of us this season with the way that they've adapted to Donovan Mitchell coming in and they've played consistently. What I can't figure out, and even looking at the stat sheet last night, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. They're not rebounding the ball great outside of Capella, but what's wrong with the Hawks? I mean, the Hawks were a team a couple of years ago that we were talking about. They may go to the NBA Finals. They look to be on an upward trend, and they've not played well this year. I can't diagnose exactly what is wrong with the Hawks and what they've got to do to turn the ship around.
Well, one thing, DeJounte Murray, he's a lot better player than what he showed last night, only 4-17, so he had a terrible night last night, and Trae Young only hit 1 out of 8 of his threes, Marcus. But the Hawks, now, the year they went to the Eastern Finals, Marcus, they had a lot of things fall their way that year, right?
Ben Simmons. I mean, they could almost thank him for going to the finals. The Hawks' key is not – You kind of think of them as a wide-open offensive team, but that's not who they are. They are much better when they can play and grind out defensively. They gave up 60% shooting to the Cavs last night. I don't know how they only lost by 12. So that's their focus has to be on what they can do defensively to try to win games, how they can get the best shot selection. They only shot 43% in last night's game, so I think that's it for me for Atlanta is playing focused. And concentrating on the defensive end.
I mean, the assist number was exactly the same for both teams. Rebounding, the Cavaliers out-rebounded the Hawks 37-35. Offensive rebounds, Hawks got more offensive boards than the Cavaliers did. I mean, it was a pretty evenly split game, but the Hawks just to me are not performing at the level that I feel like they should be. They're not a team that I don't think anybody's looking at right now is saying, well, they're going to be in the hunt. Come turn of the year when we start looking towards the playoff picture. They're just not there right now, and they got to figure it out.
Like Mark said, I mean, you can't let you let a team shoot 60% in that league. You're going to lose. And then Golden State last night, they got demolished by the Pelicans, 128-83. But Golden State, you look closer, and Curry didn't play, and Draymond didn't play, and Klay Thompson didn't play. And why? I mean, it was like the Golden State B team. So they just kind of mailed this one in last night, and the Pelicans got 34 from Ingram. Right. What's that, Marcus?
Not only they mailed it in last night, they mailed in the season.
I was going to say. I'm less concerned about this one game than I am what they've looked like all year long. They got problems, and I don't know. That's another team. I don't know exactly what's going on. Kuminga, for whatever reason, hadn't been playing a whole lot. Obviously, by necessity last night with all those other guys out, they had him on the floor more than he has been. He played almost 40 minutes last night and had a good stat line. So I don't know why they haven't been using him more, but they got some issues they got to figure out. I mean, does it start with the punch in the offseason, in the preseason? Does it start with the punch, and is that indicative of what the locker room is like in Golden State this year?
No, it starts with the championship. I mean, I think we see that all over sports.
Just the hang?
Yes.
I think Marcus is right. Yeah. Yeah, I do. And Kuminga now, I mean, he scored 18, but it took him 20 shots to get there. I mean, some of those young guys are a work in progress.
Draymond's been an a-hole for his entire life.
That's not breaking news.
I think everybody recognizes that they need him to be the best team that they possibly can, and whatever is going on in November isn't important, but the things that he does for that team, and it's not that he's a star. It's just that he's a perfect fit with everybody they've got. He doesn't need to hit outside shots. He's a great screen guy.
He's the right
piece.
He's
not incompetent on the floor. He can switch all five positions. He's a good defender of the post at his height. I mean, there's a lot of great things to say about him fitting in as a teammate in terms of basketball. So I think everybody puts up with him in terms of
– Look at Jordan Poole's stat line from last night. He played 26 minutes. He scored 26 points. That's pretty good, a point a minute. But then you look at the rest of the stat line, 0.0. No rebounds, no assists. He turned the ball over four times. He stole once and blocked once. I mean, that is, you know, you just can't have guys that are in the – and I realize that in the starting five, that was an exception. But Jordan Poole, that we've looked at as being, you know, the next – one of the next heirs to what the Warriors have built, he's got to play better than that when there's that much on his shoulders.
But in his defense, I mean, they started Anthony Lamb, Kuminga, Looney, DiVincenzo, and Poole. You know what? I just think this is a game you just throw out. I mean, because that wasn't the Golden State Warriors.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing to say.
Congratulations.
Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
College football playoff rankings come out tonight. I want to throw a few hypotheticals at you because I think we pretty well know, you know, what the top four are going to be and so forth. All right, but what if teams lose? All right, like Georgia, if they're 12-1 and an SEC runner-up, are they in the playoffs right now if you had to guess?
Yes. I mean, taking each team individually, yes. I mean, there's a lot of other scenarios that can unfold in which I could say maybe not. But
you're pretty confident. I mean, if any team's in with a loss, it's going to be a 12-1 Georgia's SEC runner-up, right?
Yeah, but who's going to beat Georgia is the question. They're not going to lose
to
Georgia
Well, if they're
Tech.
SEC runner-up, I mean, it'd have to be a loss to LSU in the title game.
Yeah, and I don't see either one of those scenarios happening.
We're not
going to lose to Georgia Tech. What we do have that we know for sure is Ohio State, Michigan. One of those two teams is going to take a loss.
Okay.
And so what's going to happen as a result of that? I'm a little surprised. I will continue to be super surprised. Unless USC jumps up to that five spot, I don't know. And as a result of that, potentially goes into the four spot. I'm going to be surprised because you're going to have one of those two teams. So either one of those two teams loses and stays in their spot, or USC is going to get an open door, assuming they can win two more games.
Here's one scenario that I'll break down for you, I think, pretty quickly. If USC is the conference champion of the Pac-12 with one loss and Clemson is the conference champion of the ACC with one loss, I think USC is going in ahead of them because they would have a very recent win over Notre Dame, the same team that Clemson lost to. They got Caleb Williams. They've got more star power. I think that bodes pretty poorly for Clemson with one loss. I think another interesting discussion would be, Clemson versus TCU, both teams with one loss. Clemson's a conference champion and TCU isn't. So it kind of sucks
Clemson
for TCU.
Would be ahead of them.
Yeah, if they had one loss and were a Big 12 champ, then I think you could compare the resumes of TCU and Clemson, and it might be more favorable for TCU. But
if that happens, that means they lose to Iowa State this weekend, which is not a good loss.
Okay, right. But
if TCU is Big 12 runner-up, yeah, that they would lose to probably K-State, but
that would be a rough.
No. I'm saying I thought he was saying if TCU had one loss and was the Big 12 champion, that the only way that would happen.
I don't
would be
think
Iowa
the
State.
Committee looks at who you lost to. I think they look at who you beat.
Okay.
And I think they also look at who your conference champion is. But to lose this late in the season is also really bad. I think so.
I think TCU is in trouble with one loss. Okay, Bill Connelly yesterday on ESPN.com, he ranked the teams. Their chances of making the playoffs with a loss. In other words, like he had Georgia ahead of Ohio State, a 12-1 Georgia as SEC runner-up would be, you'd probably rank ahead of Ohio State 12-1 as a Big Ten runner-up. You guys agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah,
I do.
I think that's right.
Okay, and he had both of those ahead of an 11-2 LSU as an SEC champ. So how about that one? Ohio State 12-1 as a Big Ten runner-up against an 11-2 LSU as the SEC champ. You still agree with him that you'd put Ohio State ahead of them?
Because here's why. Because Ohio State, Michigan, one of those teams is going to lose to the other one. Unless it's just an absolute massacre on the field, that's not a terrible loss. It's terrible that it's happening at the time of the year that it's happening. But you're going to lose to a very respectable team. And assuming that you keep it reasonably close – that's not as bad as some of the other losses. I mean, LSU is playing decent. They struggled a little bit in the beginning of the game against Alabama Birmingham the other night and then wound up being able to outlast them. But LSU has a couple of losses that aren't really explainable, whereas you could say Michigan or Ohio State losing to the other one is not the end of the world.
Okay, he did have an 11-2 LSU ahead of a 12-1 Michigan as a Big Ten runner-up.
I agree. That's what I was about to say.
Yeah, and he also
form, if you look at some of the contributions they're getting from guys right now, they kind of have it figured out. And to have beaten Georgia, Bama, I know some of these games were close, but just to go on to that kind of run, and you couple that with Michigan's weak schedule this year.
Michigan does have a weak schedule.
That's an LSU invitation to me.
Here was his pecking order, and I know I have to get out of here. You guys can talk about it more. He had Georgia at 12-1 as an SEC runner-up, ahead of Ohio State at 12-1 as a Big Ten runner-up, ahead of LSU 11-2 as an SEC champ, but LSU ahead of a 12-1 Michigan as a Big Ten runner-up. But then he had Michigan as a Big Ten runner-up ahead of an 11-1 Ohio State, like if Ohio State just loses another regular season game. Just loses the Michigan game, but, if they lose the Michigan game, but then Michigan loses in the conference title game. Anyway, all of those teams ahead of a 12-1 USC Pac-12 champ.
Let's hope some of the chaos unfolds the way that you stated there. I'll say this about LSU. Got a great chance to go in next year number one. In the preseason, got 11 underclassmen starting on offense. They've got impact players on defense. Harold Perkins, the outside linebacker, is a true freshman that's killing people right now in the SEC. I think the quarterback probably returns. He might.
That was going to be my question: Is Jalen Daniels going to come back?
I don't know, but they are loaded. LSU is. I mean, Georgia's got a shot to be there, but they got to replace their quarterback.
Yeah, he had Clemson behind USC, 12-1 Clemson ACC champ, behind a 12-1 USC Pac-12 champ, as you said, Marcus, and then behind that he had an 11-1 Michigan or a 12-1 TCU's a Big 12 runner-up. He had them behind all of those.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.